Welcome to the Usual Rejects podcast, everybody. Show number two. We've made it so far. So first I want to open up and introduce my co-hosts here. Devin Anderson.
Hi.
Hi. And Gregory Russ.
Hello. Such excitement for the show.
Yeah.
We're all happy to be here.
We are.
I think we're surprised to be back.
Well, I just drank a red-eye coffee, so I'm ready to go.
Well, in Kirk's defense, he's trying to get this show really off the ground, and I think you and I are
not
responding so well. Chris, what about this? This is a good idea. What do you think about this piece of equipment?
Yeah.
3 days later. Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's good. That's okay.
I am sorry about that. I'm terrible at responding. I'm not ignoring you. I'm just ignoring everyone.
It's okay. It's okay. I think between the three of us, we can figure it out.
No.
No, it's just going to keep coming back to me, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first, guys, I want to tell you a little bit about our show that we do in New York City. It's called The Usual Rejects. We take action movies from the 80s and 90s. We pare them down to about an hour, and there's trivia. What do we got?
This is the stage show, just to clarify.
Yes.
Because this is also a show, but you're telling them about the stage show, The Usual Rejects stage show.
Yes, that's the live performance that people can pay and come and see. And meet us in person and shake our hands and give us a hug because Devin really likes hugs.
So much.
Yeah. So anyway, it's 80s and 90s action movies. We pare it down to about an hour. There's trivia, audience participation, raffle prizes, and most importantly, it's a drinking game. And people get really excited about that aspect of it, apparently.
Drinking game!
You never grow out of it.
No.
Like, as you get to be like mid-30s, I'm an adult now, and then someone says, hey, you want to play a drinking game? Like, yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
Does it remind everyone of college or something, or like a better time? Is that what we're selling?
Was it really a better time?
No.
The fact that you're drinking nonstop to escape some kind of reality at that time.
Grades.
I think Devin's just going to shout out words in the background this evening. He's had a rough day. It's okay.
We were talking about college before. I never graduated.
You didn't?
I didn't even finish college, no.
Oh.
And I'm not ashamed. I used to be.
All right.
But I was like, yeah, screw you. I don't. What does the bachelor degree get you anymore?
I don't know, man. I got a BFA in drama. What does that get me?
And Devin has.
Same thing.
Same thing. And look, we're all at the same table in this very small New York City. Let's call it a studio, even though it's an apartment.
It's definitely an apartment.
Yeah, it's
It's a lovely apartment.
Theater of the mind. We're in a real studio, a real broadcasting studio.
A real
studio.
Wafting smell of boiled eggs.
Oh. When did it smell when you came in tonight, Kirk?
No. That's how you know you're in Brooklyn, right?
Well, no, my apartment, Devin came in, and I didn't notice because I've been sitting in the apartment, and then we went downstairs to meet you, came back up, and I was like, oh, it stinks in here, and I felt the need to tell him. And this is the truth. I was like, I didn't blow up the bathroom. I really boiled some eggs earlier because I was hungry, and that's all I had. I just wanted to make sure that he knew that.
True New Yorker's life.
Did you boil them all for the week so you have them for lunch later?
No, I just made three of them, and then I ate them.
Okay.
This is the life I live. There's bananas and eggs.
At the same time, that sounds fucking revolting.
No. Just in the apartment is what I'm saying.
What did you eat today, Greg? Every day, bananas and eggs.
I smash them together. It's like it's a gruel of sorts.
Where did you go to college, Devin?
Indiana University.
Yeah, I didn't even know that you had like an undergrad degree before you went to Circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just a large gaping hole in my bank account and future bank account. And yeah.
Are you still paying loans?
Yeah.
What's the balance? Tell us the balance. Come on.
Yeah. No.
Come on. I
want
to know.
We could put them up on a board. And
yeah.
Like every time you make a payment, we'll just like cross it out again.
Ding.
A GoFundMe.
And then the interest alone just, you know,
yeah,
wipes out any amount that I pay.
We could start a GoFundMe to get Devin's loans paid off. See, this is the show. You could use it.
This is the platform to get me out of debt.
Yes, please.
Well, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the idea. Is that this is going to take off and we'll make money from it and you'll pay off your student loans with it, right?
That's really exciting.
Yeah. See? You guys should commit then.
I'm committing. I'm committed. I'm just not good at responding. Look, I'm on your side. We're on the same team here.
Yeah.
So finish telling us about the show. You do The Usual Rejects on stage. It's a drinking game. It's a movie scripts. When's the next one coming up?
Hopefully April. It sounds like April. We're going to be in Midtown.
Oh.
Yeah. Late April, early May. still solidifying that. I think we know what show we're doing, but it's a secret.
It's a secret.
I can't release it.
It's a secret show.
Yeah, it's going to be a revival of something we've done. We've done quite a few different movies. Hey, what movies have we done, Devin?
Oh, my God. We have done so many. We've done Die Hard. We've done Roadhouse. We've done Speed, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. We've done Independence Day, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. We've done Aliens. We've done Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. We've done so many.
And they're fun. As a person who's not part of the actual cast, I go to the shows. Sometimes I work tech, but I enjoy the shows.
Yeah, I'd like to say that they're pretty fun. You know, we kind of change the script around so that we're not reading the exact lines that you remember. You're just kind of seeing this fun little version of what you saw, but it's a more adult version, and you get to have a blast doing it, and you get to have a nice drink alongside it.
So we haven't really talked about this that much other than when I text you like in the middle of the night or something and I see something. Devin, how do you feel about all the people that have been ripping us off lately?
Oh, you know, it's flattering. It's just absolutely flattering. But no one holds a candle
to it. Flattering?
No. I mean, you know.
You have no animosity about it at all? Or?
I think it's flattering if you're already rich from it and other people are trying to do it. Like, yeah. All right, fine. I don't care. I'm going home to my pool.
If I found, exactly.
My heated pool. But yeah, if you're starting, people are ripping you off, huh?
Yeah, straight up. I mean, there's other groups that have done this before we did. It's not reinventing the wheel or anything.
No.
But with the way that we do it, it's unique. And the drinking game aspect of it, it wasn't like that before.
Nobody holds a candle to our cardboard skills as well. So, you know, they can just go fuck themselves if they even try that.
Yeah.
I had to reference the props in the show, which are great. A lot of props. Cardboard props.
Yeah. It's all about the props, you know? It's just like watching a bunch of kids on stage with beers in their hands, so...
How much time do you spend one coming up with the props and then two making the props?
Oh my God, it's a long process. You know, I think in terms of bits. I think of like the you take a movie like you take like Return of the Jedi, which was one of the last shows that we did, and I try to think about in terms of like what are the more iconic things that I remember about that. Like I don't even watch the movie, I don't even look at the script. I just try to remember like what are the things that really pop out in my head about that movie, and then I boil it down from there. You know, like I think about like, oh man, those speeder bike scenes, that was such a big thing. I remember being so obsessed with that. And you know, you've got like the big space battle at the end, and you got Jabba and all of that stuff. And then you just boil it down from there and you think about like how it would be really ridiculously funny if there were these oversized props on stage doing these things. And that's it.
And you pull it off well.
I hope like, so.
Yes. I for as cheap as the props are, I think the point I'm trying to get across here is you put a lot of time into it, and it probably does take a lot of time, and it comes off well. It is actually funny.
Yeah. It looks like it's probably put together the day of. Like, the props look like I may have slapped them together that Saturday.
Which means you did it right. Like, that's the illusion that you present to the audience. Like, hey, they just did this.
But it's been weeks. Yes. Yeah, it's been weeks.
I assure you, watching this process, being very close to this process, Devin is not slapping anything together last minute.
Except for when the actors destroy a prop I give them a couple days beforehand to practice with. And then I'm like, well, now I have to take some glue to this.
Well, I see here we're trying to keep a little more structure than our debut show, right?
Yeah.
Which I think that first show was fun, but we were all over the place, just feeling it out.
It's all good.
Seeing how it goes. But to follow this, the structure that we have, I see that there's a comedy bit that you've put together from The Usual Rejects, Back to the Future.
You know, I was thinking how great it would be if we could bring a little bit of the show that we put together here in New York. And we can kind of bring it to listeners. And I know a large aspect of the show is very visual, but a lot of it is, you know, the lines, these iconic lines and these stories that we all know and love so well. So I put together a little something special.
And I think this is going to be great for, like, I'll sit back, watch you two.
No, you definitely are going to be taking part in this one. No, 100%.
I am not.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, definitely. We're going to definitely make sure that you are going to be playing. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be doing a scene from the famous, the one and only I just came a little. That was so epic.
I look, if the goal of this is to sell tickets to future shows, I really don't think you should include me in it.
I think this is
a good part.
This is what's going to be great about it. So I put together a little scene from not Back to the Future #1, not Back to the Future #2.
Which we've done, by the way.
We have done both 1 and 2, but a show that we have not done. So this is a scene that has not been aired or shown to anyone else. You guys are seeing it for the first time today, Back to the Future 3, the fabled Old West story where our favorite character, Marty McFly, travels back to the Old West. And guess what, Greg? Guess what?
What?
You're going to be playing Marty McFly.
Okay, yeah, great.
That's right. Okay. So for this scene that we're doing today, Kirk will be doing all of our narration.
Hello, hello.
Greg will begrudgingly be playing the lead character,
I
Marty
still
McFly,
don't think this is a good idea.
We didn't let him know about until just now, and I'll be playing pretty much everything else. And good news, folks, I don't know what time it is wherever you're at, but this is a drinking games. I've incorporated some fun drink moments, so wherever you are, hopefully it's late at night, you've got a nice glass of something.
That's hopefully,
you
know, some people listen to podcasts while they're driving.
If that's the case,
don't do that. Don't drink and drive.
At that point, yeah.
We have no liability for your stupidity.
I do like the idea of though, someone listening to this podcast pausing and like, oh, I got to go stock up in the right store.
like speed into a 7-Eleven.
Pull over.
Like six pack.
Yep. Grab some fucking Four Loko and let's do this shit. So for today's scene, Back to the Future 3, the drink moments that we will be shouting out are: drink whenever someone says McFly, drink whenever someone says Tannen, drink whenever someone says Mad Dog, and drink whenever Marty just generally seems out of place.
Ooh.
I feel like it's every line.
That's pretty damn close, yeah. So get ready to get hammered in like 3 minutes.
He's confused. They're three movies. That's the whole point of the movies.
Okay, and with that, folks, let's get this shit underway.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hill Valley, California, 1885. A tired-looking town, ever-expanding and filled with rough characters who'd kill you for a dollar. Oh, and there's this horse shit in the streets. Actually, that just sounds a lot like modern-day New York. We move our scene to the inside of a local saloon, complete with those double-swinging doors. Three rusty old men are sitting at a table when Marty McFly, the time-traveling teenage boy from Hill Valley, 1985, walks in.
Those were the double swinging doors. I just thought I'd put that out there. Take a look and see what just breezed in the door.
Well, I didn't know the circus was in town. Must have got that shirt off of a dead Chinese. I'm pretty sure we don't have a phrase for it yet, but I'm guessing it'd be something like real piece of shit.
I should take this time to mention that Marty does in fact look like a real piece of shit. He's wearing red pants along with a tassel-infused pink and light blue atrocity of a shirt. To top it all off, he's wearing a straw derby hat. Wearing an outfit like that, it's just a matter of minutes before someone shoots his ass. Let's go ahead and give that a big drink.
What'll it be, stranger?
I'll have ice water.
Drink.
What did I tell you?
Real piece of shit.
Water? You want water? You better go ahead and dunk your head in the horse trough. In here, we pour whiskey.
The unamused bartender takes out a bottle of whiskey and pours a small glass. Marty stares at it. There's a steam billowing from the top of the glass. Because, you know, Bill Nye, Snapple fact of the day, whiskey did that.
Excuse me, I'm trying to find a blacksmith.
Hey, McFly!
Drink.
Thought I done told you never to come in. You ain't Seamus McFly.
Drink.
You look like him, though, especially wearing that dog ugly hat. What's your name, dude?
Martin. Eastwood. Clint Eastwood.
Drink.
What kind of stupid name is that?
Take a look at them moccasins. What kind of skins is them? What's that writing mean? Nikkei.
Drink.
Well, what is that? Some sort of engine talk or something?
Bartender, I'm looking for that no good cheating blacksmith. You seen him? No, sir, Mr. Tannen.
Drink.
I have not.
Tannen.
Drink.
Your mad dog, Tannen.
Drink.
Double drink. You're really killing it over there, Craig.
Mad dog.
Drink.
I hate that name. I hate it. You hear? Nobody call me mad dog.
Drink.
Especially not some dooted up, egg-sucking gutter trash.
Mad dog Tannen quickly draws his pistol and begins firing at the door near Marty's feet.
Dance! You hear me? Come on!
Sorry, it takes a while for my gun to fire.
Come on, you piece of shit! You can dance better than that! Dance!
Mark keeps his feet going while the dust clears. When it does clear, we notice that he's doing Michael Jackson's moonwalk.
Billie Jean is not my lover. Woo.
Oh, that was great. He jumps on one end of a wooden plank, sending a barrel of tobacco spit at the other end of the plank, ending up spilling up all over Buford. Buford draws his gun, points, and clicks. But nothing happens. Are performance issues genetic? Marty stumbles backwards and trips near the old timer's table.
You better run, you piece of shit.
The end.
People flocking to buy the tickets. Hey, just reassure them I'm not in the show.
Yeah, no, ladies and gentlemen, we will not be casting Greg Russ.
Remember that support I said I had? I really left you out to dry there.
I thought that was just perfect, you big old piece of shit.
I'm blowing it up on purpose. Just hopefully you'll never make me do that again.
I think we should do it every show.
Every damn time. I really like the idea of just putting Greg Russ as the lead in every little scene that we do, and he just doesn't give a shit.
The reluctant lead.
Yeah, the acting, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to act. Like, you have to let yourself go and not care about that, right?
Yeah.
And I can't. Like, it's just all in my head. I would, if I were to actually give it my all, and let's say I were on stage, I wouldn't be able to do it because I would just think about what I looked like from the viewpoint of the audience, which would be like this really goofy, awkward
piece of shit.
Yes. Yes. That's a way to sum it up. I do think I'm a piece of shit. And, you know, I think that enough. And I don't need to add to that.
You don't want to picture the audience naked or.
No. Does that
like
work?
That?
Does that actually work?
I have never, ever attempted that. Why would that work? Kind of a fucking analogy is that?
I never understood that. Even as a non-actor, it's like, let's picture them naked if you're giving a speech. They're in their underwear. It's like, no.
You got raging erections.
Yes.
Ooh. That'd work for me.
Oh, yeah. So, new bit, guys.
New bit.
What do you think? Yeah. Please send us your comments on our email.
And suggestions. If you've gotten ideas for scenes, and I swear to God, if you tell me you should do a scene from Schindler's List, I'm going to reach through this goddamn microphone.
Is that a common
Yes. thing? You would be so surprised. Yeah. After every show, there's some smartass that comes up to me, and they're like, you should totally do Schindler's List.
And then does he high-five his friends after that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely.
And they just fall down and roll down the aisle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's these people. It's like the people yell, it's Freebird at a concert. Yeah. I know at this point it's become such a joke. Like, people just do because they know it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a while, Freebird! And Freebird! Then they want all this attention from their friends and approval and a pat
Schindler's
on the back.
Schindler's List!
You know, I'm not creative or original at all. High-five me.
Yeah! Jews!
Yeah.
Yeah! But any other shows that we've been suggested? I know Dunstan Checks In was Sean Curry's.
No.
Yeah, that was the first time you're like, okay, man, this is my friend. And I hope Sean listens to this at some point because he's awesome.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But I love that, like, we just done a show and Devin was excited to introduce me to Sean. And Sean's done shows with us too. But this was before that. And and Devin's like, this is my buddy Sean. He's been giving me some good ideas. And the first fucking thing he says to me is he goes, yeah, man, I think you really got to do Dunstan Checks In.
I was like, that's not what it says. That's not what he said to me before. That's not what he said to me before. I swear.
Sean.
I was like, thanks for the suggestion. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay.
Kirk shoots me a look like, yeah, we're really going to hire this guy.
That's a guy vying to be on in the cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made his way.
He made his way.
Top Gun.
Yeah, we did a production of Top Gun, and he played the slider to my Iceman.
Do you have a lot of people actually reaching out? I want to be in the show.
Yes, all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because it's an interesting thing. It's not like regular acting. It's like a really specific skill set. And because we've done so many of these together, we know like how it all works and we work off each other really well. And like,
we even held an audition.
Yeah.
We even held an audition for one time. We were trying to get a character, like a character actor, and they had no idea. They really had no idea. Like, I gave them sides. I told them what the whole show was about. And you really have to see it. You really have to see it to be able to kind of understand what we're going for. But, you know, they're out there. Those actors that kind of get that shit. Like, this is those iconic things that you know. And, like, I could deliver lines from movies, like, pitch perfect. Those are the people that we want to pull in that just know this stuff by heart.
Well, you make it look easy. Like, it's one of those shows, again, you know, going back because you have the props that are cheap and everything. I think people watch, like, I can do that. Like anything, really, though.
Right.
Anything that's creative, it's done well. It does seem like it's maybe easy to do. But I just assume dealing with those people has to be insufferable. The people constantly want to be in the show. reaching out. I can do this.
It's flattering. In the show. It's validating. It's yeah. It's great. You know, it means a lot.
That's nice of you to say. I took that down a negative path. Oh, these yeah, sons of bitches.
I mean, sometimes imagine. It is. It's tough when you just don't have the opportunity for them, or you have plans and people want to be involved, and you don't give them the chance. And I mean that's just comes back to producing theater in general. I always run into this where people really want to be a part of something and they feel rejected. Usually rejects. They feel rejected because we didn't include them in that one specific thing. And like, I get that because I'm an actor. Like, I know what rejection is. It's like every second of every day. It's disgusting. But I don't want to do that to people.
But you have to, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to make decisions, you know? And I try to explain to people, it's like, no, like, in some of the best people that we work with, too. It's like, well, it's not this one. It's going to be the next one. And most people can see the long game, but not always. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, running the chain theater. Which I don't know if you want to mention what that is on the show.
Yeah, of course.
So tell people quickly what the chain is.
Tell them.
Yeah, well, mainly we produce main stage theatrical shows. A lot of revivals of hard-hitting shows from the 70s and 80s. We've done Wolf Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Hurley Burley. Last year we did In the Boom Boom Room by David Rabe. He worked with us on that.
Pillow Man. Got to mention Pillow Man.
Yeah, Pillow Man.
Written by Martin McDonough, who just wrote 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah. And he directed that too. I mean, that shows you the depth of his genius.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Pillow Man's clearly one of the best written plays ever. Not that grammatically that sentence I just said was great, but he's just a genius, man. And that's what's amazing about the reject shows working within the theater company. And I think I particularly, like, during that time, solidified that in my brain that a lot of the people that were in Pillow Man, well, 3 of us, do the user reject shows.
Yeah.
Kyle, Devin, and myself were in every user reject show until very recently. And the audience that came to see the user reject shows came to see Pillow Man, which is just a, you know, it's a 4-person show. It's known, but people came because they liked us in these user reject shows. And they came to see us do this really serious play and blew them away. And like, what's so exciting about it was that it was people that didn't necessarily even go to the theater, because theater's become this bougie thing that people feel like it's too much money and they can't do it and it's not for them. But they came to see Pillow Man, and it's something that they'd never seen before. They didn't go just because of Martin McDonough or whatever. They came because of us, and changed them. You know, people talked about the relationships with their brothers and fathers and sons with me after. It was an incredible experience.
I didn't have those conversations.
No?
No.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't. Nobody told me about their fathers and their brothers and their sons.
No? Well, maybe you should wait and talk to the audience a little bit more.
That's true. I probably shouldn't just like book it.
It's tough, too much in character.
We talked about the state of radio briefly on the last podcast and how that's changed and there's not really an outlet for people to get in or do the kind of shows that, you know, would be quality shows. And I feel like the same thing with theater, right? Especially in New York, which is rents. The way they've skyrocketed, and that, you know, that's part of the city. I think that's always been happening. But, you know, to have a theater like yours, as you were saying, people think it's expensive, but it's not. It gives people access to theater. So hopefully you get it back up. I know it's still existing, but you have a space again, hopefully, in the works for people to come out and see these shows.
Yeah, I mean, we had our own theater in Long Island City for 4 years. If you can believe that. It was 2 years ago already since we closed that theater, but we've been bouncing around in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens doing stuff. But it sounds like sooner than later, we may have our own space again.
Back in business.
Back in business, 24/7.
Second life. And second chance.
We could hopefully set up this podcast there and not have to,
sit in the hard-boiled egg room.
Yep.
Well, we're going to have to get a hot plate in the theater and cook hard-boiled eggs. Clearly.
Housewarming gift for the...
Up and on.
Definitely going to be hard-boiled eggs.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to move topics a little bit. And because this is a pop culture podcast, we do want to move from Back to the Future 3, which was produced by Steven Spielberg, the immortal Steven Spielberg.
What are your thoughts on 3, by the way?
I love 3.
You love 3.
I do.
Yeah, man. That scene, oh my God, that scene, I could do that scene with my eyes closed. That scene is what got me into theater. No joke. Like the 3 old saloon guys, like those voices, I did those voices for a high school audition for a play called How the West Was Fun, And I did those voices, and that was it. The guy, the director, brought me in. He put me on speech team. So that fucking scene is what brought me into fucking acting. So when I was like, we got to do a scene from The Usual Rejects, it's got to be something that I know, like, everyone will know all about. They know the voices. They know. I was like,
do the third guy's voice again. It made me laugh. It's good.
Oh, God.
We can pull up Old Timer 3.
Must have got that shirt off of a dead Chinese.
Yeah, that's dead on. Did you like Western films?
Not particularly. I didn't really grow up with the whole, you know, like Shane and like all of those iconic movies. Like, I kind of came in toward the end with like Clint Eastwood, you know, Unforgiven, things like that. But the older stuff, no, at least for me.
You, Kirk?
Yeah, I love Westerns. I love every genre. I really do, just as long as it's good. And Westerns, it's just so iconic of our country. And when you go out west and you see what it used to be, or if you visit Tombstone, Arizona, it's cool, man. I love the movie Tombstone, Wyatt Earp, and 310 to Yuma, a million others. It's just, and people that use those tropes in other movies, I tend to gravitate towards it even more, yeah.
I'll be a huckleberry.
Maybe we're going to do Tombstone?
Maybe we'll do Tombstone next
time. Yeah.
As a kid, Westerns now, you know, I've watched them and I enjoy them. As a kid, I didn't like them. I think that's why I didn't really like Back to the Future 3.
Oh.
Because it was set in the West. Don't get me wrong, I would still watch it anytime, even now, if it's on TV or something, I'll watch the film. But in my mind, the West, a lawless land where people run around and, you know, they don't follow rules. Which is strange, because I'm not the kind of person that likes authority or wants rules, but you know, if they were the right kind
anarchist
of rules.
You.
If they were the right kind of rules, I'd gladly conform. It's like, take other people into account. And I feel like that wasn't happening too much in the West. People weren't really thinking about each other. Like, just out for themselves.
Did you think it was like bullshit, these movies? And that they were trying to add some law to the land? I mean, that's the point of most Westerns.
No, I know. I understand that. It's just, I think that I'm just telling you why the West in general didn't appeal to me. Like, I went to Japan and I thought the order there, self-imposed by society, not like government, which is great. When it's self-imposed by society, everyone's like scared to do something wrong because they'll be shunned. And I loved it. This is the way it should be. People should, you're not getting other people's way. You're not making their lives harder. Ultimately, sure, if you lived in that kind of society, I wouldn't like it. But, you know, walking, everyone stays on the left side of the sidewalk. No one's littering.
I can see the appeal of that after living here.
When you're lining up for the subway, there's stalls painted on the ground, 1, 2, 3. And if you're first person in stall 1, you get on the train first. No one pushes you. It's like, that's your spot, and everyone gets in an orderly fashion until it's too crowded and they shove people on. You know, those guys come with white gloves and shove people on the trains.
They do?
Yeah, you haven't seen those videos?
No, I don't know much about this at all.
Yeah, in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Like, that is my worst nightmare as someone that just generally doesn't enjoy being touched, just, you know, or hugged, or, you know, even remotely being close to people. Being shoved into a train like sardines, that was just, God.
I look one of these up later. It's amazing, Kirk.
It's disgusting,
They
Kirk.
Get as many people on
it's
as
disgusting.
They can. Yeah, they just shove them
they
on the
shove
train.
Them
They're
on there.
Pushing them
they
on the
push
train.
Push them in there.
And then think about the person who, speaking of the eggs, farts.
Yeah.
The crowded trains. It happens here. It's crowded. And someone's like, yeah, I can get away with this. No one's going to point me out. And there was one time I was on the train and that happened. And I lost it.
Greg Ross!
I was like, it wasn't me. I know. You smelt it. You dealt it. No, I didn't. Someone else did it. You know why? Because I have respect for other people. I wouldn't subject them to that. So it was just one of these things where it happened. And I started, seriously, you just did that. You're just hiding amongst these people. And I was alone. And that's when I actually thought, maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe I've been in New York for so long.
That's the old West in you coming out.
Yeah, see, who knows?
Is everyone really quiet or did they react to what you were saying?
You get some nods. No one like says anything, but I think some
just
people
just nods.
Yeah, I smell it too.
Nods of approval that
American.
I did it. Yeah. But anyway, I threw us off topic again. So you were getting into Spielberg.
Yes,
Spielberg. Because he produced Back to the Future.
Yes. And I want to talk about the new movie, Ready Player One.
Oh, my God.
Is that a good oh my God?
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, my God. That's right. I should probably create a bad oh, my God, and a really good oh, my God. So let's just go with oh, my God. That's a good one.
I don't know what that if that's a good or a bad one.
So do the bad one again.
Oh, my God.
And the good one.
Oh, my God.
Okay. There's enough there. We can differentiate.
Oh, my God.
So tell us about Ready Player One, Devin.
Oh, my God. It's so amazing. I mean, it's just as someone that really enjoys the, you know, all of the pop culture references of the 80s and the 90s. It really is just a Bible of all of those references. And we're talking about video games, movies, comics, TV shows, everything thrown into one little like 300 page book. And if you had to really sum it up, it's really just like The Matrix and Willy Wonka. And I didn't really come onto this book until last year, and someone kind of threw it my way, and I knew that it, like, it was on Spielberg's radar, and they like, you got to read this. And I read it, and I read it in like a couple days. And then the next thing that I found was that Will Wheaton did the narration, or the, you know, the book on tape. And then I listened to that twice. And so in like a matter of 2 weeks, I had already read through Ready Player One. It just, I took to it like a fucking duck takes to goddamn water. It was just, it's incredible. And I have no doubt that the movie is going to be very different from the book. And I loved the book. I loved the plot. I love the characters. I love the structure of it all. I have no doubt, at least from the trailers, it looks like it's going to be a major departure. But I have no doubt that what Spielberg's going to bring to this is everything that the book really captures, and that's all of those references.
Is that because the book would be too difficult to translate for screen?
Maybe. Well, you know, it's isn't it the old age-old dilemma these days where it's like, can producers, you know, separate a film into two parts so that they can make sure that they adhere to the structure of the book? And I felt Spielberg in this case was just like, no, I feel like I can still capture this book, but, you know, keep it to an hour 40 or something like that. And I have no doubt it'll be very different from the plot of the book, but it'll still be there.
What is the plot? Like, I've seen the trailers, but I don't know much about it.
So the plot of the book is in the fairly distant future. Basically, everybody's in the virtual world. Like, your real life is a source of shame, really. People go to escape their real lives into this virtual world called the Oasis, and you create your avatar, who you really want to be. And it's just like, it's an amalgam of like crazy pop culture references, you know, people wearing their favorite looks from their, you know, that 80s movie, or, you know, they drive around in the DeLorean, or they hop in their Millennium Falcon. And it's about this kid named Wade that you kind of fall into his story, where through his eyes he unveils this game, this competition that this Willy Wonka-like figure has put out upon the world, and that's, he has hidden three Easter eggs into this oasis, and whoever finds them will basically be the heir to his fortune and to the oasis. So the book is basically just like this huge Easter egg hunt, and it's incredible.
It looks awesome. I mean, the reviews have been really good so far. I think it's interesting to me that someone who had so much influence over that era and pop culture in general is the one who's
direct references.
Yeah, I mean, to his own stuff, that the Back to the Future DeLorean is in the trailer.
Yeah, it's running around the streets of, you know, New York or something like that. And in the most recent trailer, I saw the Jurassic Park Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, really?
Just tearing around the streets. And I didn't see it yet. That's incredible. Like, that's gonna, like,
it really is like every Spielberg film, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's shoved in there.
And that's kind of that was my big thing, was like, from loving the book, like the book, because, you know, you don't have a problem with rights. You know, you can just kind of, everything from every universe. We're talking like anime to, you know, your favorite 80s sitcom. But in this one, you know, it's a movie, so there's producers and there's rights involved. So you have, like, you're going to see things that were like, oh, only this studio and only this studio, but not that studio. So
I think it's because it's him. I mean, that's the only reason that came together. Yeah. The fact that Star Wars is included in this too. That's what I just heard was the big reveal, that the Star Wars stuff is going to
really?
Be there.
Perk, you got to say spoiler. Like, it's some people.
Well, it's in the trailer. So.
Okay,
I think trailers are free game. I mean, other than the fact that a lot of trailers lately have been ruining the entire movie, a la Shape of Water, which is the entire movie in a minute and a half, right down to the last fucking frame.
She did need to bang that creature.
Yeah. Do you hear what people are calling it now?
What?
Grinding Nemo.
That's pretty funny. That just took me out of the film. There's no need for it. And they didn't show it. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Shape of Water.
I mean, it's in the trailer pretty much. So
they don't show it, but it's like, and she's
your
like
imagination
talking
takes
about
over.
The mechanism. And it's like,
mechanism.
I don't know about that. I just, it was good.
Yeah.
Best picture of the year?
No.
No. No, not in a world where all those other movies exist.
Which one do you think should have won?
Well, you know what? To be honest, I'm going to be 100% honest. Oh. I, Tonya, didn't even get nominated. I thought it was the best picture of the year.
I liked I, Tonya. That was good.
My opinion of, you know, it's you know, it's all a game where people pay for, you know, what they're winning and the yeah, time
you get the
it
promotion
comes out.
Behind it, like the studios, and we're pushing this one. We're gonna get you the nomination this year.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was a lot of great movies that in that list too, Three Billboards being one of them. And Phantom Thread, which is a real
it's
film.
Still my favorite. Like I loved Phantom Thread.
Oh, you didn't see it yet?
Didn't see it.
It's just the way.
It's Blu-ray soon, right?
If you look at the trailer, you think it's some kind of stuffy British romance film. It's not.
Exactly.
It's not.
That's exactly. I was like, oh, man.
It's succinct. Like the dialogue is as much as it needs to be. Not anything more. They don't ever explain anything. It gives you time to think during the film. And just this codependent, fucked up relationship these two people have. It's great.
Mm. Yeah. But it's like time and place factor into the Oscars. The same way the Hurt Locker won, and nobody had seen that movie. You know, I saw it, but you know, most people didn't see that movie at the time it came out. And it like, how many people are watching the Hurt Locker right now? Like, it won Best Picture of the year, so something's, you know, different about the Academy Awards. But for like what this year has been for the Me Too movement, for women's rights, for media portraying people as what they are, like I, Tonya. I guess I'm just drawn to things that are out of the era that speak to this era. Maybe that's something that I really just personally always like and that we come back to in everything that we produce. But I saw some reviews said something about it being similar to Goodfellas. And structure-wise, that's kind of what they were referencing. I think it's excellent. And she's just fantastic, too. And Allison Janney and just everybody just knocked it out of the park. It was a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
The best picture winners, it's like you forget them so quickly. I'm just going to pull up a year here for you. 2005.
Hurt Locker?
What? No, just try to guess which.
Well, guess? The best.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you remember? I'm just proving a point that nobody actually.
By the
it's
year?
So strange.
I mean, maybe like, when okay, I was younger I could do that.
Just even listing some of these. Crash. Way. Remember the Crash
one
Best Picture?
Yes, I remember Crash.
The Artist won Best Picture. Argo. Yeah, Argo.
Argo.
Forgot all about that.
I liked Argo.
I love Argo.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
Yeah,
Spotlight was good, too.
Yeah, it's another movie, though, that's telling and not showing, too, though. And that's the post is the same thing this year.
And my only point with this is that just it leaves your mind. And then, oh, yeah, that film. I forgot about that. Because you're talking about if people are watching The Hurt Locker right now. Probably not.
I feel like
if
back
you do,
in
it's fine.
The 60s and 70s and 80s and even 90s, when they were producing so many films and the quality was so high that those movies, like, they had to compete to win those awards and artistically had to compete.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's always the case anymore. They're just not making as many movies as they used to.
Especially not good films like that.
Yeah.
Like anything that would compete for a best picture. And the studios, that's too much of a risk in their minds. I don't know. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Like anything else these days. If you can't make when a film's like, hey, you only made $150 million, that's like profit. You netted $150 million. Not good enough. That's a failure. That's a failure? It's a failure to you?
Yeah.
Bringing in that kind of money? Not good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's cool to see Spielberg put out a movie like The Post now, and in the same time frame, put out Ready Player One.
Yeah, talk about that. 1 year doing two films that are pretty much opposite of one another.
What is your favorite Spielberg film?
Oh, Jesus! Oh, yeah. God!
I mean, so many life changing experiences. I don't know if there's any other artists that you could say has affected so many people in a modern sense. I mean, I think about E.T. when I was a kid and how tied up into my emotions that is, even when you see it now. Like when E.T. is sick, try and watch that now. And it just...
Cry like a baby.
Oh,
cry like a baby.
Does it still hit you too?
Baby.
No, yeah. That hits you more now. When you're a kid, it doesn't really register as much.
I used to skip it. I used to skip it on the...
Did you ever watch it and hope that it would change? Like, maybe this time you won't get sick.
I think as a kid, yeah, you do that.
You watch films.
That's how I am with every film.
Maybe this time.
Don't go upstairs. Don't.
Somewhere, somehow it changed. So, yeah, it won't play out the same way this time. E.T., though, when they re-released it and remastered it, they changed the guns to walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
He says he regrets that now, and now when they release it, they stopped doing that. I think that was a George Lucas thing when he was going in and changing all the Star Wars, and Spielberg said, yeah, maybe I have little kids. They shouldn't be watching these guys running around with guns.
I agree. Let's take the guns out.
Is that George Lucas?
Yeah, that's a let me put a loaf of bread in my neck first, and then it'll be a better impression.
I don't know if that's going to read over the podcast. Just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, Devin is wildly looking for a loaf of bread around Greg's apartment right now.
There's some rye bread, but it may be moldy.
It's just eggs.
Yeah, just eggs. You could swallow a couple hard-boiled eggs, serve the same purpose, right? I think it would give you the effect you're looking for with that.
You got a favorite Spielberg film?
Yeah, Greg, what'll it be?
My favorite? Man, I don't know. That is a tough one.
Do it to it.
I don't know if I have a favorite.
Oh, you dick.
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Curveball.
Did you just do that to be subversive?
Yeah.
No, but I was thinking of Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously, with Phantom Thread.
Incredible.
It's tough. Like, picking favorites is hard for me in anything. It's like I like so many of them to pick a favorite.
Yeah, I don't know if I have
it. That may be a cop-out answer, and I'm sorry if it is, but, you know, I'm not trying to avoid it.
Anything that moves you besides Lincoln? I mean, I guess Lincoln was moving just to hear Daniel Day-Lewis with that, because you read about Lincoln, or if you've ever read an autobiography of Lincoln, which apparently I have for some reason, and that high-pitched voice that they always talked about him having. Yeah. It was the first time that I feel like he was portrayed with that high-pitched voice and the accent. And I was surprised with that movie that they didn't make it a year's expanding experience, that it was this very specific time period.
Yeah, I like that.
It was good, you know? It was great that Kushner wrote that script.
And yes.
It's genius, and it's really ballsy that Spielberg focused on that time, because anybody else who made that movie, I feel, would have tried to do from a young boy through his death.
And yeah. You bring up, and as a joke, people say Usual Rejects should do Schindler's List, but that's a moving one, right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Anything moves you? Yeah, sure, that one. Saving Private Ryan.
Of course.
Munich, I thought, I liked it, but I feel like there was like a very natural end, and I can't remember exactly what it was now. And then it went on for like another 30 minutes.
Yeah.
There was a point, it's like, yeah, that was good, and then it's not over yet, huh?
It's interesting that his style has changed so much as an adult, too. Like he got really super mature all of a sudden. It was Indiana Jones and some of the best movies ever made, and they hold up forever. And then he...
Crystal Skull.
Oh, God. We'll talk about that later.
You roll over that one.
They hold up forever.
Are there any Spielbergs on the docket for rejects that we've been talking about?
I don't know. I know that we've always tossed around the idea of Jaws, just because I know I would very much like to play the shark.
And I want to play Quint.
Yes. You've made that clear.
There's a couple of roles that I vied for. Most of the time I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. I'm happy to be here, but that's one of them. Yep. I just want to be Quint.
Yeah. In our contract, we have several stipulations, and Kirk gets Quint.
You want to be Richard Dreyfuss, Greg?
Yeah, you want to come on board?
Sure, okay.
You want to come on board?
I'll go up there. Yeah, let's do it.
Your begrudging impression of Richard Dreyfuss?
Yeah. I'm going to do it. You thought I'd say no. Now I'm saying yes. What are you going to do?
Do it, okay.
I guess we have to
bring him on. It'll be promotion for the podcast, right?
All right, now you're calling my bluff. Yeah, we'll see. Let's talk about it. I'll give you my demands.
Call my people.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I want. And then if you can match those, I have a very specific rider. Hard-boiled eggs are on the rider. You got to bring those in.
Yeah. Housewarming gift.
So what are your least favorite Steven Spielberg films?
I've never seen the BFG, and I know that I will never see the BFG.
Why is that? Because of the title? I think it says Big Fucking Giant. I can't get past it. I think that America said, fuck this. We're not going to take our kids to see a movie called Big Fucking Giant. It's Big Friendly Giant,
right?
Which I feel like the big is redundant. There's no need for it. The giant's usually big. Just friendly giant.
He's really big. Fine.
Yeah, the big friendly giant.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, what are the other ones that don't really land? What are the other...
I mean, I can make excuses for most things except for Crystal Skull.
Sure.
But the refrigerator, the way you got into that refrigerator, avoided the nuclear blast. Like, that's quick thinking.
I feel
like you would have died in that. In that situation, you would have never thought to get in the refrigerator.
Or Shia LaBeouf swinging from the goddamn trees with the monkeys.
Oh, yes.
I kind of pulled myself out of that one.
I couldn't fucking stand him in that movie. It's just the fact...
Could you stand him in any movie?
Mm. Yeah, you know, yeah, the beginning?
He's got some good performances under his belt.
Yeah, there was something... And he's done some stuff recently that's been pretty good, too. It's just... it's one of the few times that somebody's personal life, I feel, I mean, Crystal Skull aside, personal life just pulled me out of ever watching them in anything. He just seems like such an ungrateful prick. And I say that specifically because of Crystal Skull. And even when they put the movie out, he was doing the press tour and the reviews started coming out and he started bad-mouthing the movie. And you'll see him next to Harrison Ford making excuses for the movie. I think he turned around and called him an asshole in one of the interviews, too.
Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's Harrison Ford, baby.
He's,
yeah.
he's not ungrateful, though. He cares about you. He wants you to live your best life.
Shia LaBeouf?
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it!
See, look, he cares. That wasn't about him. That wasn't, you know, by putting himself on green screen and saying, Photoshop me, key me into, you know, any kind of scenario you can think of. That wasn't about him. That wasn't selfish.
Okay, so, like, I know he had a horrible life growing up and everything, and we need to...
You can empathize with that.
I can empathize with that. And he has talent, too. Like, even Fury. He was great in that.
He was very good.
But then you hear stories about how he was pissing in the tank while the other actors are in there, and they were going to kick his ass, and they're like, no, he's in character, he's a method actor. Going back to Daniel Day-Lewis, okay, so, like, Daniel Day-Lewis is the king of method actors in everybody's minds, right?
Sure.
And it drains him. He's got to leave for, like, 5 years after he does a film.
Yeah, and you could see it on the screen. You could see that the work is there, and it makes total sense. But also, you have to be able to talk to that person. You have to be able to work with them. You don't want them fighting people on set like he did with Tom Hardy during that movie Lawless, which I never saw.
No.
Was it worth him punching his co-stars in the face and rolling around on the ground? I don't know, because I didn't see that fucking movie. But I can't imagine ever working with somebody that's like that nuts. And you hear these stories like, okay, so he was going to do a play. I guess maybe this is a big part of it for me, too, because obviously as theater actors, primarily, that's what we do. I heard the story of him being in Orphans with Alec Baldwin. And Orphans is this really well-known play. It's like a three-character play.
Oh, this was the one that he got pulled out of.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He got fired from. Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, yeah. So the story goes is he was afraid he was going to learn his lines. Or maybe this is just, this could all be alleged allegations that are written down, but it seems like it's realistic. So he was afraid he was not going to be off book, and he had to super prepare. And it's all this insecurity bullshit that you hear from people. So he came in off book to the process. Okay, being off book means that you know all your lines. So he's walked in the door with all of his lines learned, which is great. Hey, anybody wants to do a show with me and they know all their lines when they walk in the door?
Yeah.
That's fucking great. Yeah. Okay. But there is a process to these things. And Alec Baldwin, who, in my opinion, is a genius. I do. I think he is. I think he's great.
Is that a mocking laugh?
I don't know. I just... Genius and Alec Baldwin, I don't put him on the same pedestal.
Never expected.
No? Well, I know Alec. I studied with Alec in master's classes.
You
I've
do.
Done three different master's classes with Alec after I graduated college. I had a really great experience with him. And I was always super impressed with particularly Glengarry Glen Ross in college. We used to throw that on and
sure.
just worship at the altar of his genius with that role. I'll say it again. I'll say it over and over again. Malice is another great part. That's a Sorkin, right? Wrote that, I think. Mm-hmm. Great, great movie. Okay. So Alec can really just do anything when he's the best cold reader I've ever seen in my entire life. You can hand him a script that he has no idea what it is, and he will play, you know, he'll look at it and be like, oh, I'm an 80-year-old woman, and play it, and you're just floored. And he's really specific, he's really intense, and he knows what he wants. And his verbal acuity is off the charts. He's really smart. So this is a guy who's well-trained in the theater, okay? And he has a lot of respect for the theater. So Shia LaBeouf, or is it LaBeouf or LaBeouf? I don't know.
Who cares?
Okay, whatever. So Shia shows up off book, and he decides that Alec is a has-been and sucks because he doesn't know all of his lines yet. Which is not unheard of, walking in. It's a rehearsal process. They rehearse, you know, most shows for like 6 weeks, okay? Before the previews start. So Shia flips out and starts saying Alec's lines before he can say them. because he knows Alex's lines too, so now he's going to show him up. Oh, and it's a really kind of aggressive role, and apparently he punched a hole through the door and the wall during one of the scenes while they were rehearsing, okay? And fucked up his hand and shit. And from everything that you read online, Alex said, okay, guys, it's either me or him. And knowing that Alex is more of a draw, they fired his ass. And also, it's an insurance liability if you're dealing with an actor who's a fucking lunatic.
Yeah, sure.
So Shia LaBeouf goes and can't handle the fact that he's fired from this show and decides that he's going to start following Alec Baldwin around. Unbeknownst to Alec Baldwin, he starts stalking him. And like, can you imagine ever working with somebody that's that fucking insane? That this is a professional actor who gets paid millions of dollars by people to do shows, to do movies, excuse me. And then he gets his big Broadway debut and his solution is to tear a hole through a wall and then start following the other actor around at night. You know, and this guy's like, you know, Alex married. He's got like kids. Come on. Like,
he has many kids.
Yeah. Now he has many, yes. Many kids. I knew him before the many, many kids. But holy shit. Like, and so now Shia LaBeouf apparently is doing the most self-aggrandizing thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And he's doing a biopic of sorts. I'm guessing it's loosely based off of his life, where he will be playing his own father.
Really?
Have you heard about this? Yeah.
This is not a joke.
No, this isn't a joke. He's going to be playing his own father with Lucas Hedges. Am I shouting, by the way? I see you messing with the dials. I get really excited and start shouting.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Don't worry about that stuff.
So Lucas Hedges, who...
Sure, yeah, Lucas. Yeah, yeah.
He was in Manchester by the Sea and Lady Bird. He's in Lady Bird too, right? Yeah.
Mars Attacks?
Is he in Mars Attacks?
What? Mars Attacks. I'm just saying random words at this point.
The movie with Jack Nicholson, Mars Attacks, with Tim Burton? Was he even born when that fucking movie was made? No, that's how old we are. But anyway, so Lucas Hedges is going to play Shia LaBeouf's son, okay?
So Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, he's going to play Shia LaBeouf.
Can you imagine, by the way, being on set with Shia LaBeouf while he's playing his dad, you're playing him, the kind of input you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
Like Shia LaBeouf there. Why would you sign on? Who's behind this?
He did some other movie with him, the director. I think it was called
Is there
Connie
a studio
there?
Is studio backing?
I can't imagine. I mean, this guy is the biggest insurance liability known to man. Like, he goes on a press tour for fucking Indiana Jones and starts...
I mean, at this point, you asked the question earlier, you know, about working with him, if it's worth it. At some point, obviously, it's not. Like, it tips. That balance tips. Like, all right, he brings people in, he's talented, but it's not worth it anymore. And I think that you can push that. Like, that line is pretty far out, because I feel like a lot of people are very difficult to work with, but... You know, they'll still be cast because it is worth it. But the positives working with Shia, they can't at this point be worth it anymore.
No way.
Well, yeah, and the best part of it is that I I saw Shia LaBeouf in person.
When he was doing the stuff in Queens?
No.
Didn't he have some street art going on there?
Because like his new thing is that like he's doing all
Museum
this
of
crazy...
the Motion. The
Museum of the Moving Image, where he started screaming in people's faces. Yeah. And the cops arrested him because he was getting too close to assaulting people. Yeah, well, I saw him. I went to see Cabaret with my fiance and her family. Cabaret on Broadway with Alan Cummings.
Michelle Williams.
Mm. It's pretty early in the run. I think it was still previews. And I'm there with the family, and there's somebody shouting at the fucking stage. Now, the way the Cabaret set up is that there's little nightclub stands in front of the stage. So they set it up like a real cabaret in Germany at the time. And somebody is sitting at one of these cabaret tables and shouting at the fucking stage, Alan Cummings, and like during the show, he's interacting now. He's becoming part of the show. I can't see that it's fucking Shia LaBeouf. Okay. He's got a blue t-shirt on. It's got a big fucking rip down the side of it. And he's screaming and yelling. Michelle Williams comes on and says, "Hey, Michelle, she's on stage, dude. This is a guy that just was about to do a stage play, and he realizes that he's screaming at some poor woman." And then Alan Cummings comes into the audience, and he like grabs his ass. He slaps his ass. And I'm just getting more and more pissed off. I'm looking at the security. They're shaking their head. The security guard's like right next to me. And I'm going, what is going on? If I wasn't with family, I would have gotten into a fight with Shia LaBeouf. because I didn't want to do it. You know, it just was the most unconscionable thing I've ever seen an audience member do. And sure as shit, as soon as the act ended, the intermission started, they swooped in and grabbed his ass and pulled him out of there.
It's a shame it took that long.
Yeah, well, they let him go. And then apparently he was harassing the bartenders. It was so
didn't
funny.
He spill on the, is this the same incident he spilled on the street after that and caused more trouble? I forget.
Yeah, I mean, he's been arrested like 20 times.
There's a few so of those. Many. Yeah, there's so many that it's blurring together at this point.
I don't know, man. I don't know how these people continue to have careers like this.
He may not have that much of a career. Like, he's doing his own things at this point.
He's playing John McEnroe in some movie that's coming out now, and I saw some thing in Esquire where they're talking about the resurrection of Shia LaBeouf.
And I guess there is always a person who's like, yeah, bring him. He's a draw at this point, even if it's for the wrong reasons.
That's true.
Yeah, because he did Transformers, so he's got that box office total, but who the hell wants to deal with that? But that being said, Shia LaBeouf, if you're out there, we do want to add you to our list of
He's definitely on the list. I was going to ask added to the list of guests on the show if it was worth definitely. It to you.
I'll do it. I'll talk to the man. I'll be like, what were
you
doing that night?
He'll fight you.
That would, I mean, really, would my career have been different if I got into a fight with Shia LaBeouf that
night? Yeah, are you kidding?
Absolutely. I think I would have been heralded.
You would have. You'd have been America's hero for like 5 minutes.
Local actor.
Actor had enough.
That's how you be
When's
presented.
Enough enough? I've had it.
Well, whatever you need to get the boost, to get to that next level.
I think that would
fighting
be
Shia LaBeouf.
I wouldn't be the first person who did it. He obviously gets in fights everywhere he goes. Tom Hardy apparently and him got into it. He's another guy apparently who fights people all the time.
How much of it do you think is an act and how much of it is like a disorder?
That's a tough call.
Yeah,
and I feel like you can't answer it.
I know nobody.
Yeah, I feel like you can't answer it unless you're
in it. Maybe it's just a shitty thing that I'm like shitting on this dude who obviously has some kind of thing going on mentally or
maybe.
Disorder.
Or maybe he's brilliant like Andy Kaufman. I don't want to give him that kind of credit.
Oh.
Hey, for the record, I do not believe that. I was just illustrating the point.
Andy Kaufman. What's funny about Shia LaBeouf?
It's true.
I love Andy Kaufman. Speaking of method actors, I watched that documentary on Netflix, Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah.
I've been dying to see that since that. I was so engrossed because I was a young gentleman when that came out, and I was so engrossed with his process, and I was so excited to see that movie, Milos Forman, and I saw it, and it was good. And he was spot on, but the movie just didn't do everything. And then you see the documentary, it should have came out together.
Yeah. Well, watch that documentary. We can talk about it next time. I'm curious on it.
I saw it.
You did watch the documentary.
Oh, the fucking second
you
that did. I got uploaded.
I thought you said you wanted to watch
Netflix.
It.
No, man. No, I totally saw it. It was spectacular. But it also shows you, I guess we could talk about this a little bit, process, you know. We all have our own process with this. And I think theater, as much as I was so excited about these things as a young man, these people that were method actors and they just went to the great lengths to give these spectacular performances. I think in the theater, you can't fucking do that. And it forces you to work a different way. Plus, you have to do it over and over again. You can't blow it all out of the water like Jim Carrey did because you'll burn the fuck out. And he burnt the fuck out.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah, he's toast.
It seems like it changed him. Like it fundamentally just changed who he was as a person doing that film.
And you hear like on even the Grinch set, he was rough to deal with. He was fighting with the makeup artists and all sorts of bullshit.
Jared Leto does that shit too. The method acting.
Yeah.
He played that awful Joker.
Being worth it.
He played the awful Joker in a Suicide Squad and, you know, would send people.
Rats.
He sent people.
Yeah. Rats.
I'm the Joker. And, you know, played great. Yeah. You don't need to send a rat.
He's a rat.
There's no reason for
it. Is that because Heath Ledger did it that he felt he needed to do it too?
Pressure was insurmountable.
I don't think he was. Was he method acting Heath Ledger? I don't think they've said that.
Nah. It's who knows?
I don't know if he was method acting, but yeah, Jared Leto, Blade Runner 2049. Like I was excited about that, and then when I saw Jared Leto in it, to me that wasn't a draw. It almost made me not go see it. But luckily, he's only in like three scenes.
Yeah.
So
did you see it?
I did see it.
I fucking loved that
movie. I did too. I thought it was amazing.
Talk about one of the best movies of the year. Holy shit.
But it didn't have the appeal that it needed. And I understand that.
Oh, whatever. People need to grow up and watch a longer movie. It's not a big thing.
Well, even outside of the first film, Blade Runner, which is funny because, you know, it's the Philip K. Dick book. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And never once is Blade Runner mentioned. That was just like a different film the studio had, and they liked the sound of it. And like, yeah, just call this one Blade Runner. And call the guys who hunt the androids Blade Runners. So, but that's just an aside. But that first one, he was still cult. It's a cult film. And people talk about, yeah, I love it, but I, you know, obviously not enough.
Yeah, I mean, well, the sci-fi creations, I think, were really influential to so many movies after it, other than the actual movie being a big draw. I don't know.
What visually, about- visually beautiful. Sound design. Like, I never even think about sound in films, because if sound's good, you shouldn't be thinking about it. But in that one, just like the setup of scenes, if you saw it in the theater, it was like, wow.
Yeah, it shook the theater.
It was great. Yeah. Loved it.
What about you, Devin? We were talking about process. I mean, I know that we've worked together many, many times. I think I've worked with you more than anybody else that I've ever worked
with. Too many to count.
Yeah. I mean, I know that your process, does it change from show to show? Or
I would say that I approach every character with whatever the character needs. You know, I treat the character with the respect that it deserves. And, you know, going back to doing something like Pillow Man, where you play these dark characters, because, you know, he is able to write these incredibly three-dimensionally dark characters. You know, as an actor, it's a little scary because you know that you have to dip into this, but you do it. You do it for the sake of the character. You do it for the sake of the writing. And you have to make sure that you touch base with yourself almost every day, because you could lose yourself to it. You could lose yourself to it if you're doing, you know, if you're really tapping into the energy that, you know, he's written. Like, it's overwhelming. It's enticing, you know. You can get drunk off of that power. But it's just incredible. As long as you are checking in with yourself and you're able to kind of shake it off at the end of the day, you're able to just kind of come out with it. I remember seeing a production of Red, written by John Logan, about the famous painter Rothko. And it was on Broadway, and it was starring... Oh, God. Here we go. Okay, so Eddie Redmayne and Alfred Molina. Alfred Molina was playing Rothko, and his performance was stellar. Amazing. And I'll never forget this to this day. The show ends, and it's this incredibly climactic, you know, argumentative scene. Like, they're shouting at each other. And the play ends, and they don't go off stage. They don't, you know, the curtain doesn't come down. They just stand there. They turn around, and... everyone just stands up and starts applauding and plauding. And I'll never forget it to this day. Alfred Molina just started jumping up and down and shaking the character off. He just started jumping up and down.
During the curtain call?
Yeah. So like nothing. Wow. He doesn't step off stage. Nothing comes down to kind of separate the line between the character and Alfred Molina. Like, he doesn't get to go off as Rothko and come on as Alfred Molina. It was just, he was up there and you got to watch him just kind of shake loose this crazy, crazy character. And I remember thinking, like, that's how I would want to approach it. Because I don't want to go too dark to the point where it becomes a part of me. I want to be able to shake it off at the end of the day.
And have you worked with anybody that's claimed to be a method actor?
I don't know. No, I guess not. I feel like I would know.
Yeah.
My performance tonight is Marty McFly was method.
Was it now?
This whole thing where I just pretend I don't care about things. That was just to get into the role.
That was the true.
The negativity. The true, yeah.
Marty McFly.
The apathy. That was just, you know, I'm a very positive person.
I'm
really
excited to see what you bring to the table on all future scenes.
I think we should interview Greg as Marty McFly now, clearly.
And then we'll do that. We can do that next time. My process for this show is, hey, we'll get to it, Kirk. Sure. That's a good idea. Yeah. We'll do it.
Oh, my God.
While you're in character, though, I do want to ask you how you feel about being... separated from your home in 1985 in Hill Valley.
I don't know. It was sad.
You're not desperately searching for a car to drive you 88 miles per hour? And
No. Best improviser right there. No.
Yes and, Greg.
No.
Yes and.
No, we're at the end of the show. No. Maybe I need some inspiration here.
Says, while you're going to wake up and work hard at it, nothing is impossible.
There he is.
Is he holding the all spark when he says this?
Where anyone else would quit, and you're not going to stop there.
Yeah, good advice.
What made him do that? Like, what made him decide to give people advice?
Even Stevens.
But the way he did it, yeah, on the green screen, it's just the attention seeking. That's what caused him to do it.
Well, guys, is it that time for our special guest? Believe it or not, we actually have our first celebrity guest. Can you believe that? That's our second show, and we have a celebrity guest already, Greg.
No, I know. You put a lot of work into the show, and I appreciate it.
Well, he asked us to give him a call today. He is a well-known actor,
And I'm calling him, right? Why isn't he calling us?
You also know him from the fantastic film Johnny Mnemonic. We're going to call SAG Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Keanu, how's it going, man?
Hello.
You sound a little down. You all right?
Yeah.
You just wandering the streets, it sounds like. I hear car horns behind you.
Yeah, it's a peaceful night. I think I might find a bench.
And just sit and contemplate.
I found a good one.
Well, Keanu, I'm a big fan, and we got to talk briefly before we had you on the show here, but I just want to say again, so everybody can hear it, that I really appreciate your work, and I know that we were talking about acting here. Is there any way you could tell us a little bit about your process?
Wow. Well, mainly, my agent calls me up, and I get the script, and I just like to go for walks, just long walks, and I just let the script come to me, and I let it wash over me, kind of like the scene in The Matrix. And I actually was one that suggested that like this silvery fluid washes over me. Cause that's how these scripts come to me. They kind of creep up onto me and inside of me. And then I am Neo.
Well, Keanu, I understand that you've created something for our show special. I mean, it's such an honor to have you on today. I understand that you have some stories about people being rejected.
Yeah, so much rejection, so much sadness these days. I find myself just taking in these stories, and I have to share them because they deserve to be shared.
Can you share some of those stories with us?
Absolutely. So this first story is from Gladys, and she went into an audition, and this is her story. Director. So Gladys, you're doing a million things at the same time. You're stressed, but focused on getting work done. We want to see you do that when you open the door. Me as Gladys. Burst through the door like Hulk. Hurts my shin in the process. Almost hits the cameraman. Director. No. And that was it. This next story is from Vincent. And this was a story of heartbreak. Took pure MDMA. Went to a couch surfing meetup in Miami Beach. Met a cute Argentinian girl. Things opened well. Then, for some reason, I stared right into her eyeballs for like a minute straight. I was absolutely enchanted. I couldn't look away. I couldn't! My pupils must have been the size of tea saucers. She got really freaked out and told me I was making her very, very uncomfortable. This was in front of like 17 people. I felt something akin to like a hydrogen bomb explode in my chest. This kicked off a bad trip where I felt that the whole womankind had just rejected me. I went home and lay in my bed in the fetal position and aching with embarrassment and loneliness. The feeling was so gnarly that it lingered for like a month before I finally got it out of my system. Drugs are bad.
Wow.
And this last story was a text message between two people, and it really just cuts right to the core. What are you doing? Laying in bed? Just laying in bed? Nothing else? I'm eating cereal. Ha ha ha. Nice. What would you do if I was in bed next to you? Eat my cereal? LOL. I mean, if the cereal wasn't there, then I'd get out of bed and go get cereal. The end.
Wow.
Such rejection.
I think I might open up my sandwich and just have a think.
Well, I really want to thank you for joining us today, Mr. Reeves. It really means the world to us. And I'm hoping that you can call in the future, too, if that's all right.
I will collect these stories for you, Kirk. I will collect them. I will bring them to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Reeves. Thank you for joining us today.
Party on.
Party on, Keanu.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you believe that?
I don't believe that.
Oh, my God.
Devin certainly doesn't believe it.
Yeah, I mean.
He's still just speechless.
Keanu Reeves called our show.
That was something else. I don't know. I mean, like, it's Keanu Reeves. This is a guy that, you know, I've grown up with. And, like, some of those movies, man. I mean, like, Matrix, Speed. And then you hear the guy and you hear the stuff that comes out of his mouth. And it's like, that just cut me right to the core. I got a lot to think about tonight.
I mean, he seems like a great guy. You see those videos of him giving up his seat on the subway for people?
Gentleman.
He is a gentleman.
Wow.
And he gives part of his salary to other people working on the set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He buys people like bikes. Like apparently like the whole fight stunt crew for Matrix. Like apparently they were getting salaries cut and he bought them all bikes.
Wow.
Like what a cool guy. Well, that is just...
Next time he's on, hopefully, you know, you're prepared. You have something to say.
Yeah. I know you're shocked. No, I really should. I should probably prepare something next time so I'm not just dumbfounded over here.
It's all right. It's all right. We can cover
it. I'll get him next time.
Yeah,
That's just big. That was big. That the second show.
That's huge.
Yes.
That's freaking amazing.
I don't think we can top it for the rest of the night, so.
I mean, is there anybody else that you want to have join us at some point?
Ultimately, yeah. I think we're continuing to build our list.
Richard Grieco.
And we have John Oates.
John Oates.
And we have Shia LaBeouf and Meatloaf.
And Shia LaBeouf.
So, yeah, that continues to grow each week. But yeah. Keanu Reeves, that was unexpected. And
That'll boost the ratings.
Yeah. I think this is a good start, guys. Well, that's all we have for you this evening out here in Brooklyn. We're happy that you joined us for our second show. This is the Usual Rejects podcast, pop culture podcast. Visit www.usualrejects.com. Send us your comments and give us your likes on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all those other fancy things. And we will join you again soon. Thank you. One of these nights, the music and the rain.